Hey, it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
One of my favorite reads in the Los Angeles Times is Ryan Karchi, who covers USC. Good follow on Twitter as well, and he's joining us. Are you waiting for the smoke to emerge from the Pac-12 CEO group meeting and find out if we got a new pope, or what are you doing?
I am on the edge of my seat right now, waiting for this likely no vote. Can't wait.
What do you think's going to happen?
We'll see.
What do you think happens here? What, you know, can you read the tea leaves here? Do they play? Do they play on October 31st, November 7th? What's your sense?
No, everything I've heard has suggested, well, I think we could all see now that they're going to play, or at least it seems to be angling that direction. But in terms of the start date, everything I've heard from people, at least around here, is that the Halloween date is very optimistic. And I think Larry Scott sort of hinted at that this morning on the Dan Patrick Show, was that, you know, it might be in that area, but, you know, getting everything together for a six-week timeline, which would start essentially this Saturday if they wanted to make it back by Halloween, that's packing a lot in. Now, that said, I also thought they wouldn't be able to get clearance from LA County within 12 hours of them deciding they wanted to do that. So, you know, at this point, the timeline is moving a little bit faster, I think, than most people thought. So I wouldn't rule it out, but I think, you know, if I was a betting man here, I would guess November 7th, which, being that that's 2 weeks after the Big Ten, there's a lot of implications for being that late. But October 31st just sounds so fast.
Give me an idea on USC's front. You know, how in shape are they? How ready to hit the field are they, given the restrictions in LA County?
You know, actually, compared to a school like, say, Stanford or even UCLA, I know they, you know, just given the way their academic calendar has worked, they haven't had guys on campus or didn't start workouts as soon as USC did. USC's actually been conditioning and at least working a little bit on fundamentals since mid-June. So they are ready in terms of conditioning. I don't think it would be USC that would be holding the group back, but if, say, you know, a Stanford has about a month less time to condition than USC, I mean, that disparity is clearly not fair. So, you know, I do think, and USC seems to agree that six-week window is the appropriate amount of time, and I think we'll end up seeing that. It seems like that's what everyone has suggested. I know Larry Scott suggested that this morning, too.
The players who had spoken out, you know, Big Ten makes the decision to play. All of a sudden came this chorus of players, including some USC players, who said, hey, we want to play. Let us play. Where do you think that was sparked from, and why wasn't that evident, you know, a month ago or 2 weeks ago?
You know, I think the timing was very specific in terms of when the letter from USC players was released. I know USC players have wanted to play for this entire time. It's not like that changed. But I think they also see, and the USC administration sees, that rapid testing breakthrough that the Pac-12 has had in the partnership with Quidel has made it a lot more reasonable of an argument for players to bring to administrators and to, you know, local health officials. So I think that happening, plus I think they all read the tea leaves. I think they saw that the Big Ten was about to make a decision to come back. And so it was perfect timing to release this letter that then put the onus on Gavin Newsom, California's governor, who then the next day fumbled over himself to answer questions about state restrictions. And bada bing, bada boom, suddenly there are no state restrictions. So I would actually argue that the timing of the letter worked out exactly how the fact or how USC and how USC's players would have hoped. So I think in that sense, it had its intended effect. And now we see things are moving quickly.
Ryan Karchi of the LA Times is our guest. The Clay Helton era has been marked with lame duck, and can he coach like this? And what's the state of the union with Helton, and how has he operated to this point with that hanging over his head and the rest of us going, how much time does he have?
Well, you know, this is an interesting year, just given all of the financial implications of the coronavirus and just the fact that there isn't going to be a full season, no matter what happens. So I think before all of this happened, the new USC regime and the athletic department decided, well, we're going to put all, we're going to give Clay Helton everything he needs to succeed. We're going to, you know, increase spending on recruiting. We're going to bring in the best possible assistants. We're going to build out a video staff. They've done pretty much everything they can to help Clay Helton. Now it's really just up to Clay Helton to prove himself. Now, I don't know how much you can prove yourself over the course of six, maybe seven games. So I think in all likelihood, we'll see Clay Helton make it through this season. And, you know, it's not a small matter, the financial implications of the whole situation, too. You know, I don't know how much his buyout will change after another year. I don't think anyone does, but it's still going to be pretty substantial. And, you know, it's pretty hard to convince your trustees to spend, you know, 10, 15, maybe even $20 million on a buyout plus whatever it costs to get you a new coach when the university is projecting huge losses because of COVID. So I think we're going to see that not even just at USC, but just around college football in general, that, you know, these coaches who are potential lame ducks or who are coaching for their jobs, they're going to have a little bit more leeway, just some for financial reasons, some for reasons that, you know, they just won't have enough games to prove themselves. So I think that's kind of where Clay Helton falls.
It's evident that the Big Ten, with 8 games in 8 weeks, the last game happening, you know, a day before the playoff selection committee was supposed to meet, they are gaming to make the playoff and maybe believe that Ohio State can get there. And they, you know, that conference wants to be part of it. If the Pac-12 starts late, Ryan, what odds do you give that the Pac-12 can either get the playoff committee to move the selection date back a week or two and include their whole season? Or do you think that the committee would take a Pac-12 team that was 6-0 at that point and go, look, they're good enough, we think they can compete?
You know, I think there's really just one scenario where that makes sense, and it would be that some of these conferences, you know, experience so many postponements of their games that they end up playing a similar amount of games. So, and in the Big Ten's case, that could definitely be a possibility. I mean, I noticed before I jumped on with you that, you know, Michigan State just had, you know, a positivity rate of 12% among its athletes. Well, that's enough to shut it down for a game, I would imagine, depending on where that breakout was. But, you know, we're not out of the fence of those games being postponed, even if the Pac-12 and Big Ten are saying they feel it's safe enough to play now with daily testing. So there is a possibility that the Big Ten or the ACC or the SEC, these teams only end up playing 6 or 7 games. Now, in that scenario, if the Pac-12 only plays 6 or 7 and they're on equal footing, I don't think it's unreasonable to expect that a Pac-12 team will get serious consideration. But if we're talking about a 6-0 Oregon or a 7-0 USC, you know, matching up against an 8-0 Ohio State, a 9-0 Clemson, I just don't see that they're going to be put on the same, you know, level playing field, unless maybe Oregon blows out every team by 3 touchdowns, then maybe they have to consider it. But I do think if all goes as planned in terms of games not being postponed, it's going to be a pretty serious uphill climb for a Pac-12 team to make it.
We're talking to Los Angeles Times, Ryan Karchi. He covers the USC football. What's it going to take, Ryan, to get USC back on top of the Pac-12? That's the big question, I'm sure, by all your friends. What's it going to take, Ryan? What do they need to do?
Well, they figured out the first step, and that was find a quarterback that has the potential to win the Heisman. I really do think Keaton Slovis is good enough to lead this team to that point. The biggest problem at this point, I would say, and it's become even worse over the course of COVID, is the line play. I mean, the USC's defensive line had a lot of guys, but they already lost one, J.T. Fele, likely to the draft. He signed with an agent, so whether he can come back or not will probably be in the hands of NCAA if he wants to come back at all. And USC also lost its best offensive lineman, Elijah Vera Tucker, to the same thing. He also signed with an agent. we'll see how that works out. But those are two massive blows to the offensive and defensive lines. And that's kind of been where the problem, especially in terms of development, has been for USC over these last couple of years. They're not able to produce enough pressure, and they're not able to protect their quarterback enough. So I think that's a good place to start. But, you know, recruiting-wise, we've seen USC kind of turn a corner with its new staff. Now, maybe that evolution will continue, will carry over to these next few years, and we'll start to see USC be a team that dominates on the recruiting trail like they once did. But at this point, you know, it's still up in the air, and I think most USC fans will tell you that that all comes back to Clay Helton. And, you know, I thought this was going to be a very interesting year for him, and it's really hard to square the fact that, you know, if they struggle a little bit this year and Clay Helton is still the coach going into the next year, you know, are you talking two lost years then in terms of making that progress? That's kind of the position that USC is in right now, and it's not ideal. Granted, they do have a lot of things going for them. Like I said, Slovis, they have a lot of position player talent, especially at wide receiver. I would argue they probably have the best set of wide receivers in college football, or close to. So there's a lot going in their favor. The problem is they haven't been able to put it all together, and this was a year that would have made a lot of sense to do that. Now they don't really get the chance.
The players who have either opted out or signed with an agent, you know, and I communicated with a couple of the parents of players this morning. They were frustrated. They said, you know, hey, we had no indication that they were going to reverse course, and there was nothing new. Like, you know, our kids made their decisions. Where do you think the NCAA will stand on that? And given that it's a weird year and, you know, neither one of us could predict what the NCAA will ultimately do, what do you think happens?
You know, I would hope at least that the NCAA would be understanding in this situation, just given these kids didn't have all of the information. So they can't really do anything about their conference backtracking on this decision. And, you know, there is some precedent for, you know, especially with college basketball, with players signing with agents and then being able to come back. So it's not like the NCAA has completely shut out this idea entirely. I think at some point the NCAA is going to have to make some sort of ruling. Now, whether they go all the way in saying that anyone who signed with an agent, you know, they can come back no matter what, no holds bar, I don't know. But I do think they will make some concessions, just because it seems like that's the only fair thing to do at this point. Now, granted, yeah, the NCAA has a history of making bad decisions in those situations, so I can't really say that's for sure what's going to happen, but it just makes too much sense to me to not happen.
And finally, Ryan, and I know we're all waiting to see what the presidents and chancellors do, but, you know, the LA County and the state of California health restrictions were really confusing. Oregon was in a similar boat. I got the impression, based on Gavin Newsom's comments, the governor in California's comments, that he had given guidelines for the state and that it really wasn't enforceable. And then what impression do you get from the county? If USC had just gone out and held a full practice, was somebody going to show up and arrest Clay Helton, or were they going to get fined, or were they just going to get funny looks?
You know, that whole situation was confusing just in general. I'm not even totally sure that Gavin Newsom knew what was going on. Now, granted, he has a lot more important things to worry about than the state of college football, so I think that's understandable to a degree. But, you know, I don't think there was any world in which USC was going to openly defy the county or defy the state. Now, what would have happened if they would have? I don't know. But, you know, USC has been very image conscious, especially under this new athletic department regime. They have wanted to do everything right. They've really kind of tried to work with these groups instead of actively against them. They've made a lot of their movements very quietly. And I think that's why you see, you know, the Pac-12, unlike the Big Ten, you know, there wasn't a lot of dissent in terms, or at least public dissent. Now, quietly, USC was working with people around the conference to try to move things along. And there's a reason why you didn't hear those things. So I do think, you know, USC is, at least now, is pretty adept politically in terms of how to handle these situations. So, you know, I can't say for sure what would have happened, but I do know that they were very, you know, very strict on trying to follow those protocols, especially just, I mean, the players themselves in the Pac-12 were talking about, you know, how worried they were with the Pac-12 We Are United group. how worried they were with safety and protocols. So I think there's really no upside to USC trying to defy anyone there. So they quietly worked behind the scenes, and it seems like their work has definitely led us to this point where Pac-12 football might be coming back soon.
Take the temperature of the average Southern California citizen. Do they want to see football back? Do they have mixed feelings? Do they absolutely not want to see this? This is all totally selling out. What's the temperature down there?
You know, I would call it tepid. I think, you know, especially the Pac-12 is in the Big Ten. I think that's fair to say. There aren't, you know, rabid fans that are, you know, busting down the door of Mike Bone's office to force them to play. But I do think, you know, the Pac-12 fans at least don't want their conference to look like a joke. And I think that definitely kicked in right around when the Big Ten announced its intentions to come back. And I think that, you know, that pressure has something to do with the fact that the Pac-12 came back so quickly. Now, obviously, and I think you've talked about this before too, that the Pac-12 certainly acted like a follower in this situation. I think you could also say that their fans are kind of like that. They weren't necessarily the ones busting down the door, you know, protesting out in the streets, you know, writing angry letters to get football back. But now that the Big Ten has made that move, they question, you know, why not us? So I think the fact that they were able to move quickly actually saved them a little bit of that, you know, those angry feelings from their fans. And if they can move forward quickly without any, you know, hiccups, which there still could be plenty, I'm sure, I think those fans will come around and they'll be happy as anyone that football's that.
Ryan, you do a great job covering that program. We love having you on. Thank you, and good luck this afternoon as the news breaks.
Great. Thanks so much.
All right. Ryan Kartsche of the LA Times covers USC. Really weird times. Couple of takeaways in that interview. First and foremost, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 changing their minds. I understand the decisions that some of the Oregon players and some other players in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 conference have made is a no-brainer decision to get ready for the NFL draft if you're going to play in December and January. Something changed. Big Ten conference said, hey, we have rapid daily testing. We can move. Pac-12 said, oh, we're going to move too. We're going to try to play in the fall. Push the envelope. Suddenly, those players are left in limbo. Many of them have hired an agent, would not be eligible to return, have given up their amateur status. The NCAA needs to do the right thing, needs to step in, be reasonable, look at the calendar, realize it's 2020, and go, hey, this is one of these times where we can appear to be flexible and we can appear to be fluid. Everybody thinks we're so rigid. An opportunity there for the conference to look good. Second thing is, there's a lot of people out there that are oddly confused over what has gone down in the last 2 weeks. What has changed? There are still people out there that, and I feel like maybe it's because they're so used to things being rigid, or maybe they work in professions where things are in black and white and very rigid, not flexible. We're in mercurial times. Things are changing on a daily basis. And you have rapid results testing that is a game changer. It's a game changer. If you can create the ability to test daily and try to keep players safe, I'm not saying you will. You still have a decision to make after that. But in theory, you have the ability to test daily and remove players who have positive tests right away so you don't have these super spreader events on your team. So simply having a team function, because you're willing to invest in the cost of these tests on a daily basis, having a team function doesn't preclude you from being safe. So you can do that. That changes the discussion. Now, suddenly the Big Ten decides it wants to play, and it can get 8 games in 8 weeks, and damn it, we've got Ohio State here. We have a chance to get into the playoff and get $6 million for the conference. That changed, which triggered the Pac-12 conference to go, oh, you know what? We can't play alone. If the Big Ten hadn't moved, the Pac-12 wasn't moving either. It would have been fine just playing out the season, playing the Rose Bowl, creating this lucrative end of the season thing, but it changed. And most of us get that it changed. Your summer changed. Your weekend plans changed. Your job changed because of coronavirus. The football season can change and then change again as we learn more. So you have to be fluid at these times. And there's still some people out there, I'm dealing with them on Twitter, going, well, why wasn't it so urgent, you know, a month ago? Why weren't you banging the drum a month ago? A month ago, they didn't have rapid results testing. This is 2 weeks ago. Pac-12 should have been more proactive 2 weeks ago. That's clear. But give them a break right now. They're being fluid because these are fluid times. Leave it here. Going to break some news on Twitter here. It is peripherally related to the Pac-12 conference, but I want you to have it first because you're listening to the show in live time. Oregon left tackle and Outland Trophy winner Penei Sewell has signed with an agent, I'm told. His father, Gabriel, tells me that he has signed with Athletes First. I am tweeting that now, but you get it first because you're here as part of this radio show. So there you go. It's out there now. I've tweeted it. It brings us to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. We do it every day.
Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
Let's talk about that, Judah Newby. Penei Sewell is signed with Athletes First. If he's going to come back to Oregon, it would require an exemption from the NCAA. It's tough.
Gonna need
some help. I don't know what I'd do if I was him. I probably would stay out. Nothing to gain. He's still going to be the number two pick in the draft.
Absolutely. Yeah, from a perception and potential standpoint, nothing to gain from a season. Nothing. Shouldn't risk anything with his health. But I do hope that the NCAA allows him to come back if he wants to.
Yeah, I think it comes down to a couple different things. And it's interesting because I'm texting with his...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face...
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.